in Carmel, California. It's December the 30th. This is Dialogue Conspiracy 177. Sometimes during vacations, like the occasion out of the interim between Christmas and New Year's, there's a lot of out-of-town people in Carmel, and they pick up our program just by chance when they're driving along or have a radio, and I get letters from them from out of the state or different places in the state of California, and the program takes them by surprise. This news broadcast for you visitors in town, I must explain, is a different kind of broadcast. The format is to take news pertaining to the past political assassinations or the present political assassinations and conspiracies that are done in the United States by the various intelligence agencies and attempt to expose them through documentation and evidence and collection of research that I've had for 11 years. The program used to be called Dialogue Assassination. I think it scared a few people, but then the assassinations were a part of many conspiracies that are woven together, and we call this show Dialogue Conspiracy. We have every week for 45 minutes on Monday afternoons, and as I say, this is number 177. I've been on the air 3.5 years now at KLRB. It'll be 4 years this spring. I want to announce in local news, for those of you that are listening in Salinas, Santa Cruz, and Carmel, Monterey, that the University of Monterey Peninsula College is going to have the course which I gave with Ray Fabrizio last year. The spring semester, it was Humanities 195 at Monterey Peninsula College, a two-unit course on political assassinations. Last spring it was called Assassinations and Conspiracies, and covered the methods of government conspiracies going ranging from Dallas through Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the SLA, and the Charles Manson conspiracy, and showing the similarities between them and how these various crimes are done and also covered up by the manipulation of evidence and witnesses and the news media and through the Justice Department and the chain of command. I attempted in a 16-week course with 2 hours each week to do a rundown or analysis on the nature of conspiracies because they follow a general pattern. There's a similarity running through all of them. This semester, this spring semester, Ray Fabrizio will be conducting the course with me, and the title of the course is narrowed to investigative work on the Robert Kennedy and the John Kennedy assassination instead of conspiracies in general. And I think that's just as good because I spent 10 years just on the John Kennedy assassination alone and also following the other assassinations, but cross-filing the 26 volumes of the Warren Commission's hearings and investigation. And I think that we can apply the same principles to that, to the current conspiracies as well as the past. Now, the program, once again, got a late start in the decision of the powers that be. There were a lot of meetings to decide whether to have the course again. So it is not in the catalogs, but if you're going out to MPC and signing up for the class, it will be on Wednesdays, like it was before, at 2 o'clock, from 2 to 4, every Wednesday, and it will be on assassinations and conspiracies. So if it isn't in the catalog, look up Humanities 195, and it's 2 full units of credit for that particular course. I do want to spend some time in the news talking about the exposures of the CIA story that's breaking since last week. The New York Times began a series of articles on the CIA based upon some new allegations that they are acting illegally in the United States. This subject can be the subject of Dialogue Conspiracy for the next 3 years, as it has been for the last 3.5 years, because the very first broadcast here began with the involvement of the CIA in the coup in Vietnam in which Diem was murdered and how it was done by the CIA. Well, the heat is on the agency. The charter that was granted in 1947 specified very clearly no domestic intelligence gathering inside the United States, but it is a fact that they have been working in the United States all along under various loopholes. The newspaper said today they had various loopholes, so it may not have been illegal. They have been working with various loopholes in the United States, and sometimes quite blatantly, which people could see if they wanted to see, if they wanted to admit the illegal activities. They're very obvious, and a lot of the investigation on the political assassinations has continuously named the Central Intelligence Agency. The master spy of them all, Henry Kissinger, suggested a Blue Ribbon commission be set up to investigate the CIA. Kissinger is part of the CIA. He's head of the National Security Council, and he naturally is saving his own skin. And he's going to have a prestigious commission which has all the smell of it, of the Warren Commission. Mr. Kissinger must be getting nervous. He's perjured himself before about the involvement, his involvement in the CIA in Chile and other investigations of the CIA in the United States. He's getting nervous and itchy. So naturally, he wants one of these prestigious Blue Ribbon committees investigating it, which is like saying that he'll investigate himself like Mr. Colby is investigating the CIA. Now, Gerald Ford came out this week since we met, and he's now president of the United States, a former member of the Warren Commission, with his big headline, "No CIA Spies in the U.S." That is an absolute lie. The president of the United States should know better, but coming from the Warren Commission, it's understandable. He's the same man who told us Nixon was not involved in the Watergate and kept saying that almost until the day that he became president. Gerald Ford has been appointed president by officers of Navy intelligence and the CIA, and he's covering his team. That's why he was appointed to succeed Nixon, a member of the Warren Commission, because he can keep the traces of the CIA involvement, a lid on them, just like he did when they put a lid on who killed John Kennedy. He says the agency is not now involved in domestic work. That is just a figure of speech. For example, Colston Westbrook of the Central Intelligence Agency, in quotes, retired, then went to Vacaville and worked with Donald DeFreeze. They have ex-agents, E. Howard Hunt, retired from the CIA and worked for Mullen Associates and worked for the White House. But when he wanted a camera, when he wanted films developed, when he wanted a safe house, I mean, transportation to California, or a mouth-altering device, or a shoe for Mr. Liddy that caused a limp, whatever he needed, he got it. Aliases, identification, driver's license, whatever he needed, he just went to the CIA and asked for them. And when he wanted a man to help in the entry at the Watergate Hotel, Mr. Martinez, or out at Dr. Fielding's office, Louis Fielding in California, the psychiatrist of Daniel Ellsberg, he takes a man like Martinez who's under the payroll of the CIA. So they supply the equipment, the cameras, and so forth. And Gerald Ford tells us the agency is not now involved in domestic work, and it can be proven over and over again it is. It's a play on words. As I say, they can always say the former agents that are involved, former, and it's just a play on words. Senator Proxmire on the radio last night said we need a special investigator to go into the CIA, not the Justice Department. He made a comparison between Watergate, where the person suspect of covering up are also involved, such as John Mitchell, and can't investigate the Watergate, the Attorney General of the United States. And Senator Proxmire was calling for an investigation into the CIA of an objective other person. He mentioned Mr. Archibald Cox and Leon Jaworski. Well, when you have, he said that when we have an army, a secret clandestine army overthrowing countries, other countries, they will turn around and do the same thing here. And he listed the examples of the CIA's involvement in Vietnam and Chile and Bay of Pigs and the various rumors about the CIA and the way it functions. But what he didn't do was he didn't mention any of the political assassinations. And yet, I have 109 books just on the John Kennedy assassination alone and many articles coming out on the involvement of the espionage agencies and their relationship to persons who conspired to kill John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and many, many others. But as I said last week when I closed my show, the one thing people can't talk about is murder, the murder of Dorothy Hunt, the wife of E. Howard Hunt. They can talk about how much money the CIA has. They can talk about their clandestine operations. The critics of the CIA and employees of the CIA talk about the counterintelligence division. They talk about the domestic operations division, but they don't tell what they did. They give them a name, and their big exposure in the San Francisco Chronicle today, December 30th, and they talk about the difference between Mr. Angleton's counterintelligence division as against the domestic operations division. And four men have resigned from the CIA and from the Dirty Tricks Department because of the exposures. They say, we didn't do anything wrong, we didn't do anything illegal, but we'll quit. That quit, so they don't have to be investigated. It's like Richard Nixon resigning and Mr. Haldeman and Ehrlichman resigning. If they all get out, then they don't have to be investigated because there's nothing more to do. They're out. But they still haven't gone into what their operations were that they were paid to do. They were dirty tricks. They were counterintelligence, which means they were disguised and provocateurs disguised in certain roles, but they still won't say the dirtiest things that they did. Now, while all the exposure of the CIA is taking place in the news media, the same week, last week and this week that it's coming down, also in the news is new evidence in the murder of Robert Kennedy that it was a conspiracy or a possible conspiracy in 1968. And I'm going to cite some of the newspaper articles about the Robert Kennedy case opening up at this time. But nobody has made the connection of the CIA counterintelligence group, their domestic operations, to the assassination of Senator Kennedy, who was running for president of the United States. Now, the CIA has been named in terms of the John Kennedy assassination, all the assassinations. So what you have in the news media are pages of exposure about the CIA operating domestically, including Los Angeles, California, and you get pages of newspaper this week on the possibility of a conspiracy in the Robert Kennedy assassination, and nobody having the nerve to put in print, is it possible that the CIA's domestic activities were responsible for the Robert Kennedy conspiracy? There are two separate news items, and except for this radio program, which goes to various stations around the country, I venture to say that nobody yet has said, is this what the CIA was doing in the United States? Were they selecting candidates for us by murdering a man on the eve of his victory in the primary? Now, I knew that the CIA was behind the John Kennedy assassination, where a president was murdered, or behind the Robert Kennedy assassination, where a candidate for presidency was murdered. So it wasn't difficult to write the first story about the CIA involvement in the Watergate Hotel, June 1972, because they had tampered with all the elections since 1960, and the same agents were at it again for the same purpose they'd been working since the 60s, and that was to ensure victory for the election for Richard Nixon and also for Spiro Agnew, as that case enlarged. Now, the connection between the agencies and their secret, super-secret intelligence divisions and the actual deeds that they do is the one big news story that has to be connected in the next year or the years to come. The news today mentions the counterintelligence division and the operation division, and the connecting link between those is Division 5 of the FBI, headed by Mr. Sullivan. And he was mentioned in the Watergate case, and we've talked about it on the radio before. And this also involves the Defense Intelligence Agency. All the branches of intelligence that were involved in the Tom Houston plan that is mentioned in the exposés now were involved in all the murders and the past murders, particularly, I know, the John Kennedy assassination. Now, the Robert Kennedy story got as much publicity as any conspiracy theory, they call them theories, has gotten so far in terms of it being a possible conspiracy. I don't know why. I do know why, because there's massive evidence pouring in from all sides. But James Ray has been having evidentiary hearings down in Memphis for a new trial on the basis that he didn't kill Martin Luther King. And there should be big press conferences on that, too. There haven't been. But in the last week, since we met at KLRB, there have been five large articles about Robert Kennedy and the possibility that Sirhan did not kill Robert Kennedy. And that's quite a lot of news coverage on something which the people working on conspiracies have been trying to expose for a long time. It was a toss-up which story would break first in terms of even the evidence being manipulated or off, whether it would be the Robert or the John Kennedy or Martin Luther King. But the Sirhan case seems to be getting the most media coverage. And I have to say something about our own local community, which is strange or isn't strange. It's not so strange, really, because this is a military town, and there's a lot of control of the news. The Monterey Herald is the main paper here, and while we have a lot of liberty on KLRB, the Monterey Herald does not acknowledge any work that I do in the line of conspiracies or recognize any press conferences I have on the subject. And Theodore Chirac, who's done massive work on the Robert Kennedy assassination, he was in the Bastyr Hotel next to when Robert Kennedy was murdered, He's a researcher. He produced the movie The Second Gun, which is a documentary I'll talk about in a minute. Came to Monterey, California last spring. And he came here because he said considers me one of the most renowned researchers in the United States. And he felt that the news conference, that he had important news to break on the Sirhan case, and the proper place to have it was in Carmel, California. And he called a press conference. He was on the program here at KLRB. And he called the news media, and he had a press conference. And what he brought with him was all the documentation and evidence that is breaking this last week in New York Times, Washington Post, and in Time Magazine and Newsweek. What he presented to the world on new ballistic evidence on the Robert Kennedy assassination was brought to Carmel, California, and Monterey, and made known for the first time. And the only two newsmen that covered it were Art McEwen from KSBW, Channel 8, the TV, who is very cooperative on news of this kind, and Jack Parr from KRML. And both of them met Ted Chirac and covered the information. The Monterey Herald newsmen were across the street in the park from the park where the news conference was held. One of the top editors, they wouldn't come across the street, so Chirac went to see him afterwards and gave him all the information of the ballistic evidence that there were two guns in the Ambassador Hotel and the difference in the nature of the bullets in Mr. Weissel as against the bullet in Robert Kennedy, the bullets. And the Monterey Herald didn't print one article. It should have had the same attention that the New York Times gave it this week, but the Monterey Herald ignored it. And when I called and asked them why, they said, well, this isn't news. But all the ballistic evidence that was exposed this week was brought to Monterey and Carmel last spring about the need for refiring the weapon used by Sirhan. This week, as I say, there were five large articles that came out, and for those of you who want to look them up, the December 15th issue of the New York Times, because there's many serious researchers and students listening to the show, there's an article called 6 Years Later, The Evidence in Sirhan's Case is Questioned. Then there was an article in Washington Post by Ron Kessler, December the 19th. The New York Times is December the 15th, and this is the 19th. And it goes into the evidence of Herbert McConnell, the New York consultant, on the ballistic evidence, the two weapons that were in the Ambassador Hotel. In Harper's Magazine, I mentioned it last week, January issue, 1975, Who Shot Robert Kennedy? Then Newsweek had an article, a full-page article, which is the first time that this national magazine has even whispered a conspiracy in any of the political assassinations. It's called RFK and the Second Gun. And then Time Magazine had an article, December the 30th, also a full page, Robert Kennedy, again, another gun. As I say, for you researchers who listen to the show regularly that want the articles, because we just can run them down, I don't have time to go into all the details, but they're important. And if you miss the dates, you can send me a self-enclosed envelope, and I'll give you the dates on that, send it to KLRB, and I'll send this to you. Now, Newsweek is an establishment magazine, and they still have to slant the news. They can't accept the evidence and come right out and say there's some possibility that this is happening. What's going on with these conspiracy theories? Are they really theories? One of the magazines, Time, said maybe we should test the gun. It's time to test the gun and find out what's happening. But this is the kind of coverage that these magazines give, even though they give it a whole page. Here's one sentence from Newsweek. It says, the most zealous of skeptics is filmmaker Theodore Chirac, who has patched his own theories into a movie called The Second Gun, which was released in 1973 and promptly sank from sight. Now, you would think, according to Newsweek, that a movie was made and that it was so lousy or uninteresting, it just fell of its own momentum. You know, the joke about the submarine just being put in the water and sinking. Well, that isn't exactly what happened. Those of you that have listened regularly know that isn't what happened to the movie The Second Gun. It opened in December of 73, just the turn of the year last year, in Boston and also in New York City, at the Globe Theater in Boston, New York City. It opened and it only played about 2 weeks at those two theaters. And people on the West Coast particularly were anxious to see that movie. At the end of 2 weeks, it left the theater. This particular documentary was nominated for the Golden Globe Award for one of the best documentaries of the year last year. And even though it was nominated and they wanted to reshow it for the voting By that time, there wasn't a single print available. After 2 weeks of screening in New York and Boston, Warner Brothers bought up the pictures. They bought them up, and people were told it would never be shown in the United States again. The Second Gun would not be shown again. Now, you don't buy something up to bury it. You don't buy a loser to put it in a vault, but that's exactly what happened. I asked people who listened to KLRB Dialogue Conspiracy to write to Mr. Bloomfield, the vice president of Warner Brothers, and ask where is Second Gun, so you would have something to hold on to see why it wasn't being shown. A movie manager in Carmel wanted to show it. Executive Action was very successful here. He tried to get copies and called down there, and he was told it can't be shown. It can't be shown anywhere in the United States. Now, this is a theater owner who's willing to, in quotes, lose money, and a company like Warner Brothers who bought it up on the assumption that you'd want to do business, and they were told you can't have it. And that's what happened. And some of you know by writing letters that they had no intention of you seeing it. Now, all copies of this film were confiscated, and even though it was one of the best documentaries of the year, hardly anyone was allowed to see it. In fact, Ted Schirach, who produced it, had only one copy with him, and he took it around with him to keep it safe. And he was held at gunpoint one night. Somebody attacked him or with a knife and took his copy from him and went out in a backyard and buried it. And he didn't have the copy for a long time. It wasn't available for researchers. I understand recently he has another copy now, but he was afraid for his life, and that is what happened to the Second Gun. So it didn't just sink. You know, Newsweek says it promptly sank from sight. There was a lot of manipulation. As I say, you don't buy up a film just to bury it and tell everybody you can't see it. There'd be no reason for Warners to buy it if it's a loser. Now, with all this controversy coming up, Joseph Bush, the district attorney of Los Angeles, refuses to let the gun be tested, Sirhan's gun to be tested. He said, as far as checking out the conspiracy, the case is closed. This is D.A. Bush in Los Angeles. I'm not going to fire the gun unless the court orders me to do it. Well, it may just be that the court will order the gun to be fired because Sirhan has the attorney he wanted in the first place and was never allowed to have, Godfrey Isaacs. And Isaac is a good attorney, and he's honest, and he'll help Sirhan. He wants to open this case out. You might check this out, people living in Carmel area, but Godfrey Isaacs was representing Sirhan against a lot of harassment several years ago. He was trying to take the case away from lawyers who were not serving the best interests of Sirhan. And he was visiting Carmel, California, and his wife went downstairs. She had something to eat, and then she went up and he says she turned purple or blue and dropped dead. And he suspected that she was murdered. He couldn't put his finger on it, but he suspected hanky-panky. It was in Carmel, California, July 4th, 72. He had been Sirhan's attorney at the time, and a very mysterious death of his wife. But Mr. Godfrey Isaac is hanging in there with Sirhan, and hopefully the case will be reopened. I don't think D.A. Bush, in light of all the Watergate, can keep covering up and be like John Dean investigating the Watergate. I think people's patience is wearing out and that maybe the case will be opened up again. Now, I'm laughing at these four pages and the magazine article in Harper's Time, Newsweek, Washington Post, New York Times, because I have here an article by Evel Younger. Well, it's about Evel Younger. It's by Jerry Cohn. It's from the Los Angeles Times, and it's dated July 14th, 1970. It must be dated wrong, 71. It was right after Robert Kennedy murder. It was in 1968. And Jerry Cohn is saying that Evel Younger, that's now our attorney general in California, was district attorney at the time, and that he had a group of people investigating the Robert Kennedy assassination, including U.S. Attorney Matt Byrne. That's the lawyer that was approached by the president at the time of the Ellsberg trial as possibly becoming new head of the FBI. The investigation, it says, 23-man task force selected to probe Kennedy's murder. A select team of Los Angeles policemen, each handpicked for his special skills, has been created to carry the major burden of the murder investigation. It involves a wide number of officers and wide connections in Europe and Asia, and men who develop military connections in the two continents. And this task force was going into every lead, literally hundreds of leads, that they would follow. The lifespan of the special squad will be complete only when every possible lead is exhausted. Evel Younger said, no lead, no piece of evidence, no matter how kooky, will be overlooked. If there are 10,000 leads and we checked out 9,999 and let one other go, someone would write a book accusing us of cover-up or something, and unimportant leads that might be ignored in other cases will be checked out. We don't want anything like what happened in New York with Jim Garrison, where people come in years later and say we didn't do this or that. We are aware of what is happening, and the whole nation, the whole world is watching. And with that, the District Attorney Evel Younger and Robert Haugh and Chief of Detectives began to cover up all the evidence of conspiracy of the Robert Kennedy murder in Los Angeles. That was in July, and I sent a letter down to Mr. Younger in 68, dated July 5th, 68, a copy I have here, stating my background on the Kennedy assassination. And I said that I wanted to see the investigators, Sergeant Padgett and Sergeant Collins, and that I would go down there and show the links to the Central Intelligence Agency to the murder of Robert Kennedy. Now, this is July 5th, 1 month after Robert Kennedy was dead, and on the basis of my years of work from 63 until that date in 68 on the John Kennedy assassination, I want to go down, and I referred to his article, Where No Stone Was to Be Unturned, and that I would like to go down. I wanted to discuss, this letter says, of how the Sirhan family operated, and we'll go into that a little more on the show today. I said, I will come to Los Angeles to see you any day of the month in July. I want to be before this 23-man task force and present evidence that there was a conspiracy and a plot. And I closed it by saying, at some time in American history, you legal men are going to have to meet your responsibility to all the people in this nation and not to the ones above who give you orders. I'm prepared and waiting to hear from you. And I wanted to show the connecting links that I had put together in 1 month of the Central Intelligence Agency to the Robert Kennedy assassination. Now, you remember when the Watergate story broke, 3 weeks after the Watergate, I gave Paul Krasner, who publishes The Realist, the links of the Central Intelligence Agency to the Watergate and the Mullen Associates and the various agents that were still working for the CIA. So I wanted to go to Los Angeles and show the links of the Central Intelligence Agency. And this is pertinent to the news breaking now about those small domestic squads, the Counterintelligence Division, the Operation Divisions, working domestically with the Los Angeles Police Department. Well, that was July the 5th, 1968, and I've mentioned this on other programs I remember and at the course I gave for those of you who didn't hear it. July 26th, I received a phone call from Sergeant Padgett or Mr. Collins, the two investigative agencies, and they asked me, they said, are you Magnum Brussel? That's my middle name. And I said, yes. And the gentleman said, how much do you weigh? And I told him, how tall are you? And I told him, what color hair do you have? And are you? What's your nationality? Were you American born? I answered the questions, and they investigated me, and I'm sure it went into their computer of 10,000 or more people that the CIA kept files on, because all they wanted, then I said, well, am I coming down to show the links of the CIA to the Robert Kennedy assassination? And they said, no, there was so much evidence of a conspiracy or the general information coming in of that sort that we decided to limit our testimony at the trial of Sirhan Sirhan to people who were in the Ambassador Hotel only. Ambassador Hotel only. In other words, who Sirhan knew was not important, and the conspiracy angle was never intended to be investigated. And that's like in the Warren Commission hearings, there's a letter from Mr. Rankin, the head attorney for the Warren Commission. He wrote to Dallas, Texas, that told he gave them an order that they could go ahead with the trial of Jack Ruby when he shot Lee Harvey Oswald in the Dallas jail if they limited it to who saw the shooting of Lee Harvey Oswald. Not did Oswald know Ruby, or Ruby know Oswald, or who did Jack Ruby know. It was specifically laid down by the Warren Commission attorney that the trial be limited to the shooting and not to the conspiracy of why he shot. So I think that the repetition here in the Ambassador Hotel is only one more example of about 60 kinds of repetition through all these political assassinations. And it's determined that the conspiracy angle will not be gone into. Just did he have a gun and did he shoot him? Well, even that they didn't do a good job, because now it seems that there were 10 bullets in the Ambassador and Sirhan's gun shoots 8, that Robert Kennedy was shot from behind and Sirhan was in front. and the bullets in Mr. Weissel don't match the bullets in Robert Kennedy. So even the top team of this task force eliminating all the evidence of conspiracy still couldn't come out with their findings being accurate, historically accurate, on the ballistics, much less on Sirhan. Well, I had very early in my investigation many articles about the way the assassination happened and information about Sirhan's family. The father, Bashar Sirhan, had visited the U.S. at least three times since 1957. The motive for Sirhan's actions became the CIA cover story that he fell on his head once from a horse, and this deranged him in some way. The family was actually very secretive, and an interesting point is that when the Sirhan family arrived in the United States, there was no record of the Jordanian embassy in Washington, according to the council. Now, that was a clue that they came in through the German spy agency, the Reinhardt-Gehlen CIA secret service, Nazi, the combination of the two spy agencies. The Jordanian embassy had no information that this woman and her sons and her daughter, Saida, she had a son, Adele, and a Sharif and Munir, Mary Sirhan, with four sons and a daughter, and the Jordanian embassy in Washington had no record of them. And I traced the possibility of their coming in, and it seems that the family was well off, or fairly well off, in Palestine. The father worked for a British water supply company, and then it became Israel, and he lost his job, and they were poor for a short while. And then they were going to a Lutheran church. Mary Sirhan was very religious and took all of her children to the Lutheran church. And then their connections with the CIA came through the Greek Orthodox Church. She suddenly made connections with the Greek Orthodox Church and was brought into Pasadena as an intelligence family. And I believe they were an intelligence family brought in to the same conduit of funds of Marina Oswald. Marina Oswald was a family that was well known and established in the Russian community when the Tsar was there. She had a fine training in French and in a cultured background. She was not sympathetic to the Bolsheviks and the communists, and she was brought into the Dallas-Fort Worth area with the white Russian community of which her ancestors were a part of in the old country. And Marina Oswald's conduit through the CIA was the Greek Orthodox Church. And it was the same church that had the funding for the entire Sirhan family. When they left the Lutheran church, in no time they were halfway to America with all the money they needed to buy a three-bedroom home and to get settled. And typical of all espionage agents or agency family that would be used later after they were moved into the community, they were aloof from everybody in the general community. The Sirhan family expenses were allegedly paid, the first stories were they were paid by the United Nations Relief Agency. But this could be another CIA cover story too, because the UN denied it right away and they came out and said, no, we didn't pay it. And then the church people that were supposed to bring them disappeared. So you have the Jordanian embassy with no record of them. You have the Greek Orthodox Church giving them the bread to get over here when they, up to the time, that time they were poor. You have the UN being relief fund being suggested as the one that brought them, and then the UN relief agency denying it. And so who brought these people over? I think, again, the same people that brought in the Dallas-Fort Worth community that worked with Leah and Marina Oswald in Texas. It had to be the Reinhardt-Gehlen operation. It should be as well known. There's some new movies coming out about the Nazi operations, and they're not enough. There should be more, but the Gehlen operation story has yet to be made in a pictorial version for people to see just how much money they did get from the CIA and how their agents work over here. Now, Bashar Sirhan, the father of Sirhan, worked in a defense plant in New York. He stayed there for a while and allegedly worked in a defense plant. And Mary came to California with her children and rented a three-room house, which she bought. The CIA did a personality profile on Sirhan, like they did on Oswald, and to make the motive hold, they said he fell from a horse, he was revolting against the law and order, he said he had no freedom in America, he disliked wealthy people, he became mystical, he thought his father was a second Hitler, he dreamed of being a jockey and turned bitter, he lost jobs, and he practiced at a rifle range. Now, all of these allegations are similarities to Lee Harvey Oswald. I traced for 8 years the origin of these statements. So then I began to look into the cover story for Sirhan that would make it look like he had some motive for killing Robert Kennedy. But the ballistic evidence of broke up, the cover story doesn't hold together about Sirhan and his family, and the ballistics don't hold up about the shooting, that he was the lone gunman, or even that his bullets hit Robert Kennedy. And there's also another character I have just about 10 minutes to go into, the kind of thing which was not investigated properly, but which has a lot of substance evidence and was kept out of the court trials. You see, only people, the ambassador, were used. But at the time Robert Kennedy was shot, people in the ambassador hotel heard a woman wearing a polka dot dress. She was smiling, and she yelled, "We shot him. We shot him." And she was triumphant, and she laughed, and she disappeared. You can look these up. This is a New York Times story, June 13, 1968. So the investigators, different people, began to look for the girl with the polka dot dress, and they couldn't find her. In April the 12th, 1969, the UPI carried a story, "The polka dot dress girl kills herself." They couldn't find her alive, but they found her dead, and this was the girl that was supposed to be the one in the Ambassador Hotel. Her name was Kathy Fulmer, and she was supposed to have been found in a motel with an overdose of Seconal, and she died. The UPI story, as I say, this is April the 12th, 69. She killed herself. Then June 69, a story comes out, polka dot girl never existed. The news media said that first she died in this motel in Los Angeles. Then another account said that no such person ever existed, that it was just hysteria of Kennedy workers. It was erroneous. The polka dot dress was erroneous. And that this Sandy Serrano was just overwrought and emotional, and that people saw and heard the wrong thing. Well, in a book, RFK Must Die, by Robert Kaiser, which is not a complete book at all, but which is a book on the Robert Kennedy assassination, which is more complete than the Robert Houghton book, there are examples that I have time to read you about Sirhan, with two men and another woman, and the woman fits the description of the woman at the Ambassador Hotel. And yet all those years, District Attorney Younger, who's now the Attorney General in California, and D.A. Bush, and all the investigative agents refused to acknowledge the people around Sirhan. And the important thing about the polka dot dress is that there are links to Australia, and investigators are finding links to the dangerous Eustasi that I've talked about on Dialogue Conspiracy before, that this girl was on her way to Australia, and that she is linked to this Nazi group that helped run concentration camps in Europe, that is creating violence in America, that is causing bombing and terrorism and bank robberies around the world. There's a link between Yugoslavia, California, Australia, and Spain. In RFK Must Die, there was a quotation on page 114 of a Mr. Wood who described three men. He was at the Democratic headquarters on Sunday night before Robert Kennedy was murdered. There were three men there, and they were talking in Jordanese dialect, and this man came from the Middle East. And one of them said, "He won't be in the hotel tomorrow night, but we can get him the next night." And he goes on to say, "An attractive blonde, who will be known here as Cynthia Keene," he gave her that name, "had a story not different than Mr. Woods. Between 3 and 4 on Monday afternoon, she told the police she was on Melrose Boulevard near Melrose, near St. Andrews in Los Angeles, where a young man matching Sirhan's description and two other men were with him, and one opened his pocket, it looked like Sirhan, and there was a gun stuck to the waistband, and she heard someone say, 'Kennedy, get in the car, we have to get him tonight,' and they said, 'Don't want to,' and 'afraid.' And the man with the gun, she looked a little bit frightened, and she saw some other rifles in the car. But another, Romero, Juan Romero, a busboy, talked about two men, two strangers, who fit the same description as the one Mr. Wood saw in Symphony, saw a man in the Ambassador kitchen on Sunday, June the 2nd. They were looking for waiters' coats to be worn, and a waitress, and they were in Ambassador Hotel wanting waiters' coats. And remember, at the Watergate, Mr. Martinez had a waiters' union's pass for the Democratic conventions down in Miami for the hotel there. He had a union card, an alias with a union card provided by the CIA. Well, another instance of seeing Sirhan with another man was a waitress in Alhambra, not far from Pasadena, who told the police on June the 4th at 10 o'clock, a man looking like Sirhan was with another man, and they were drawing a map together, and it looked like a floor plan. And just coincidentally, a floor plan in red ink and black crayon was found at the front desk of the Ambassador Hotel at 1:30 in the morning when Robert Kennedy was killed. Another man, George Green, co-chairman of a black organization, told the police that a half hour before Kennedy was shot, Sirhan was in the kitchen, and with him was a tall, thin man with dark hair and a girl in early 20s. She had a good figure, and she wore a polka dot dress. And the same tall, thin fellow and the girl with the polka dot dress were running out of the kitchen later. And he recognized him, and John Schammel told the FBI that this was the girl who said, "We shot him." And they ran out. Now, Edith Goldstein, on June the 6th, who lived in West Los Angeles, went out to her garbage can, and in the alley outside was her brown paper bag. And she opened it up, and there was a lady's outfit with size 9 shoe and a purse and cosmetics and a bra and panty girl and a polka dot dress in a paper bag out there. And I don't know where that dress is, but that has disappeared. There's a Robert Duane, a chemical salesman, who Tuesday, June the 4th, was with a girl who could have been the polka dot dress one who fit the description. And he had gone in the ambassador at 9 in the morning, and he met this blonde, and he was to be another salesman. And this blonde came with him, and she took a ride with him. He had to take a ride, and she went with him, and she said something in German. And Duane said something to her in German. She said she didn't understand German, but she spoke Arabic and said she was from Virginia and that she was going to Australia. And she asked him what he thought of Kennedy, and he gave an opinion, and she told him, well, they're going to get him. Kennedy's no good. They're going to get him. And he took her for a ride up north to Oxnard, brought her back. They were watched, and their car was followed. And she said, are you going to the reception tonight, the victory reception? And he didn't intend to. She said, if you come, you'll be surprised. They're going to take care of Kennedy. And he said, how do you know? And she said, I don't want to get you involved. Well, as I say, there are researchers in L.A. that believe that this girl was the one that programmed hypnotically Sirhan Sirhan before he went to the Ambassador Hotel. Now, there was another man who saw at the rifle range two men with Sirhan Sirhan, and again, this blonde, this female. And then this was at the rifle range. And they talked about Kennedy, and they're talking about a getaway, and somebody will recognize us. And Sirhan was not alone. He was with two men. And Reverend Owens, Oliver Owens, who took Sirhan Sirhan to the Ambassador Hotel and was to meet him the next night, had told the police that he also, there was a Mexican-looking kid with Sirhan, another man, and they were thumbing a ride downtown in L.A. June the 3rd. And he picked them up, and they took him to Wilshire, Vermont, and they jumped out. There was a tall, dark fellow, and there was a girl of 19 or 20 with dirty blonde hair. And the girl had left them off. They jumped out of the car, and Sirhan was going to see a friend who worked in the kitchen nearby. And the man in the kitchen was Mr. Gindross. And Owen said that Sirhan was with two other men and a girl. So I could go on and on with the evidence of the rifle range, the places, the restaurants. The police department did not compile any of this evidence, and the tragedy is that those fools down there gave the world the announcement, you know, like the CIA is going to do now, we'll investigate the CIA and we'll find out what's happening, we'll have a blue ribbon commission according to Mr. Kissinger, and we'll look into all these things, and the Attorney General of the State of California now was a DIA, and he announces 23-man task force, no stone unturned. And just the polka dot dress story, we could go on and do a whole book on it someday. And people are investigating this girl for her links to the Australia Eustasi and to the hypnotic control of Sirhan Sirhan. He was hypnotized to forget what happened. But before it took place, there were floor plans. There was a rifle range. There were people manipulating. There were people not related to each other, but 10 or 12 people that knew something was going to happen in the Ambassador Hotel that could identify the people, and then saw this girl leave saying, we did it, flying away, and the police have the arrogance to say that they were going to not leave any stone unturned. It's just outright arrogance, conspiracy. That is the CIA in the United States. Those are the stories to break. So when you read about the Bobby Kennedy, you read about the CIA, put them together in your heads and read some of these books like RFK Must Die, read Computers and Automation, August 1970, The Evidence of the Conspiracy, and read your articles carefully. Then relate the CIA to the political assassinations and write to your congressman like Proxmire, Senator Proxmire, any of them, and say, let's get the show on the road and open up these murders. That's it for this week. 1 minute over. Have a good week. Happy New Year to all of you. Have a good 1975. We'll see you next Monday.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with research specialist Mae Brussel. I'm Any questions or comments you may have concerning this program can be addressed to Mae Brussel, care of KLRB FM, Post Office Box 3904, Carmel, California 93921.